There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. Another hour of live local talk. Keeping my eye on that radar, and holy smokes, bunch of rain coming our way. And actually, if you're in northern Mobile County, northern Baldwin County, already getting it. It's kind of draped over us to the north and falling back to the southwest. The main line right now at Gulfport making its way, but some showers out in front. We'll watch this. Like Dr. Bill said, a significant amount of rain coming out of this, and we have not had that. We've kind of below in rainfall out there, so you may have forgotten where you kept your rubber boots and your rain jacket and all that stuff. You might have to remember that. So it's one of the issues actually affecting where the vaccination going on today with Mobile County Health Department. We talked about yesterday's event as well. Dr. Scott Chafers with the Mobile County Health Department joining us. Yeah, y'all saw that forecast coming and had to call an audible, didn't you?
We did. So one of our crucial team members is one of our liaisons to the emergency management agency here in Mobile. And so she's over hurricanes, and she watches the weather, you know, when we're looking at outdoor clinics. And yesterday, when she was looking at it and talking to the people at EMA, they just said, you know what, we need to call an audible and let's move it where we can keep people out of the rain and keep the cars out of the slop. And, you know, so everybody gets protected. Those are being vaccinated as well as our workers.
And where is that?
So we were supposed to run 9 to 2 today. We actually opened up at 8 o'clock down at the Coastal Response Center in Codin. It's right there on 188. And it's a walk-up clinic. So if you're in the area, they're still down there for another hour. Plenty of vaccines. You can walk up. You'll be in and out probably in less than 45 minutes.
This is a good 2 days in a row. I mean, double punch here. Yesterday, what an event down at the cruise terminal.
I just could not have been more pleased yesterday, with the exception of the train. We can talk about that. But, you know, what we wanted to do is, with the changing eligibility and almost doubling the number of people being able to be vaccinated as of yesterday, we wanted to really push hard to get as many people vaccinated as possible. And we can talk about why that is, you know, about the variants and what's going on here lately. But, you know, we wanted to do something, and we wanted to do something that allowed people that work, you know, the 8 to 5 or 7:30s to 4:30s, that they could come be, you know, receive a vaccination. And we got a lot of interest, you know, after 4 o'clock, which was great. So we broke our record, our single day record, about 2 o'clock yesterday. And then we, with the train and everything, we ended up vaccinating right at 1,400 people, which
that's awesome.
We were very pleased with. I think we could have done another 200 or so, given the number of people that got out of line, you know, with the train, but just could not have been more happy yesterday.
So even Mobile County Health Department, it gets issue with it. The train broke down and blocked people from getting to the facility. So we're just, see, the train stories, y'all make all of our shows, even if we're talking to the folks like Dr. Chafers from the health department. All right, so that's a good turnout. Obviously, this ramping up, the increased availability of the vaccine at the same time, the opening of the window of people who can get it. So this is what you got to have to get to that herd immunity, which is, I know I ask you every time, but kind of what is the ballpark for herd immunity here in Mobile County? And then, like, maybe is it the same nationally? How do people need to understand that?
Yeah. So the herd immunity right now is a kind of a theoretical number, but it's between 70 and 80% of the population, we think. And there's an algorithm that we use to calculate that. So some of y'all may have heard of a virus's reproductive number, which is the average number of individuals one infected individual can infect. So you take and you do 1 minus 1 over R naught, and that gives you the rough estimate of what your herd immunity is. Now, that R value does kind of fluctuate depending on some things, so that's why we kind of give a range between 70 and 80%.
And I guess maybe we'll go back for some remedial here, which is good with me, on the meaning of herd immunity. Why is that important? I mean, people say, well, herd immunity means that everybody has antibodies, but it doesn't, right? Why is that number? What happens with herd immunity?
Right. So let me just a background on this. So when we talk about herd immunity, I always think of cows.
Yep.
And that's true. This is where this concept came from, of how many cows had to be protected from a disease to keep those that were not protected, either through vaccination or treatment or whatever, from getting the virus. And so this actually started with veterinarians on the farm. Well, that was brought forward into humans. And what it really is how many people have to be protected, meaning either through vaccinations or through natural immunity, to keep the virus from being transmitted through the population. So basically, you're setting up walls in the population where if somebody is infected and somebody isn't infected, there are enough individuals between those two to keep the virus from being transmitted.
So it's a number, but it's not 100%. Herd immunity doesn't mean 100%.
Correct. If it was 100%, the concept of herd immunity would go away because everybody would be immune to that disease.
Let's talk about a subject we've talked about in the past, but this idea of, and I may not use the right terms here, Dr. Chambers, but somebody who is been vaccinated or has antibodies from what you call the wild type. In other words, somebody got corona and has the antibodies, not getting sick from getting it then, or not having it reproduced, but being a carrier or a repository. What's the term? Like somebody, they can't get it themselves, but they carry it?
Exactly. So, and that's why we talk about, even until we reach this concept of herd immunity, the importance of masking, even among those who have been fully vaccinated.
Because that's a big question, right? People say, why the heck? Because talk about that. I mean, looking at it on the onset, that seems crazy. If I'm vaccinated, why do I got to wear a mask?
Right. Exactly. So there are a couple of things that play into this. Let me cover the big one first. So for you to be infected with the virus has to enter your cells. It has to kind of hijack your cellular machinery and make more baby viruses. And then those viruses go on to infect more of your cells. And that's the pathogenesis. So that's the damage that virus is going to do to your cells. Well, it's easy, though, for someone without a mask to be talking with someone. And let's say I'm vaccinated, you're not. And you're infected. Well, we're talking, I end up with some of your viral particles in my upper respiratory system. And then I turn around and I'm talking or singing or yelling, which I occasionally do. And I can transmit that viral particle. That viral particle is still, I won't use the term viable, but it's still able to infect somebody else's cells. So another way to look at it is I'm kind of a mediator or a medium for that transmission using the viral particles coming through my spit and going to.
Where do they, like, that particle got shared, where does it sit? Like, okay, that scenario, you've been vaccinated, you have that immunity. Here comes that viral particle, and then you go, you know, you spread it from me to Sally. Where was it sitting as you were traveling from where I am over to, you know, meeting Sally later on?
That's great. And great question. So please remember that viruses cannot get up on their own and walk across the room. They do have to be on a medium. And in this case, it's respiratory droplets. So I'm trying to be a little bit couth after, after the meal time, but it's basically any liquid that comes out of your mouth or nose can be a potential vehicle for the viruses to be transmitted.
So it's sitting, I'll be the uncouth, it's sitting in your spit or your snot or something like that, right? That's where it's sitting?
Yeah.
So that virus is there and then bounces out of you to the next person.
Correct. And because my antibodies are working, you know, because I'm fully vaccinated, if it tried to enter my cells, that cellular machinery, my antibodies would essentially attack it if it got close to my ACE2 receptor cells.
But it's still physically inside your body with that spit.
Yes, but transiently so. I mean, it's not...
Meaning what?
It's not like Typhoid Mary. I think that's a good analogy you used before. It's not a prolonged infection, but it's there. The other reason, too, though, is we have to remember that no vaccine is 100%. So when we talk about the over 90% protection against the disease caused by SARS-CoV-2, that still isn't 100%. And that is in kind of some controlled conditions. So when you put it out in the real world, the effectiveness, so I'll give you two terms here. Efficacy is how well things do kind of in a lab and in very controlled conditions. Effectiveness is what happens once you get it in a real world. And things start to go wrong. It can be how the vaccine is stored or can be how the nurse drew it up. I mean, there's just all kinds of things in the real world that go wrong. And that's why we don't have 100% effectiveness on any drug. There's not one drug out there that's 100%, has 100% effectiveness. So that's another reason that we need to keep in mind of wearing the mask. And once we get to herd immunity, though, the probability that one person, even given all these, you know, potential shortcomings, is going to infect another person, that probability is very, very low. And that's why we really are trying to push hard to get everybody vaccinated and get to that level of herd immunity.
Coming right back, more with Dr. Scott Chambers, Mobile County Health Department. Got your questions coming in on the text line at 343-0106. We'll get them asked when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, FMTalk1065.com. Not only can you stream this very show and all the shows on this radio station, also get our podcast on there. And obviously, you dig that. More and more folks every day. It's just been it's crazy. Thank you. I'll put it that way. Thank you. The podcaster doing their thing. It's 54 hours a week of live local shows we produce from the studio right here at Airport at I-65. And you're welcome to grab those podcasts and share them around. Even if you don't catch something when it airs, you can go back and get it and subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Deezer. Listen, if there's a podcast platform out there, most likely we are on it. All right, continue our conversation like we do every Tuesday with Dr. Scott Chambers from the Mobile County Health Department. Big events, a big event yesterday and an event going on today. You said the record for the number of vaccines given, right? For y'all, that is the high point.
That, yes, we had a high point yesterday, and it was just a combination of the expanded eligibility as well as, you know, much better vaccine supply coming down the pipe now. So where a few weeks ago we were turning over rocks trying to find vaccines, you know, now it's getting to be a fairly constant state for us.
No, and I like the fact that you you say it how it is, because it was, I think, in February, I said something like, oh, Dr. Chambers, you know, when's the next shipment of vaccines coming in? You said, not this month. I remember I was slack-jawed at that point.
That's not
the story now. You're getting the vaccines, and let's talk about that for a second. Then I got some questions to get into. The vaccines. Now, we're talking plural. You know, it was Pfizer in the discussion, then Pfizer-Moderna in the discussion, then it's Pfizer-Moderna J&J in the discussion. What about J&J? Is it just the hot new thing that has people talking about it? What's the story with, should people be waiting around for J&J?
Well, J&J has probably the biggest advantage in that it has a single dose regimen. So you don't have to worry about coming back in 21 days like you do with Pfizer, or 28 days like you do with Moderna. The issue, I think, with J&J, it's not what you may have heard about. Well, it's not as good. That's not true. It's as good as the other two vaccines. The problem with J&J is that they did not start production of vaccines at risk, meaning that Moderna and Pfizer went in and started making vaccines long before their phase 3 clinical trial data were done, just under the promise that they had a viable vaccine. Well, J&J decided not to do that. They waited, you know, longer into the production and the data evaluation before they went into production. And so the initial availability in the state of Alabama was like 144,000 doses. And we are not going to see any more, apart from a couple of special allocations into populations that really need it, like jails and homelessness. But we're not going to see that probably until April or May. And so what I'm encouraging people to do is, I get it, you want to wait for it, you just want to have to come in one time, but right, the availability of another vaccine is there, and that availability is much, much better now. I really do encourage you to take it, and here's why. We're already starting to see the new variants coming out of Florida. If you go on CDC's web page and look at the number of variants being isolated, and keep in mind, these are staggering underestimations, because we only do about 1% of the total number of cases are actually typed. But we're starting to see them there. This week, you know, you've probably have heard that the South African strain has been identified here. We're now starting to see the Brazilian strains. And so they're coming. And the importance there is not these variants that are out there. The vaccines handle them well. But if we wait and allow for viral replication to continue, that's where we get these genetic changes. And ultimately, we may get a change that the vaccines don't cover. And so that's why we need people fully vaccinated as soon as possible.
Wait a second. So this is, and we got about 30 seconds here before the break, but one of these dangers of the new variants is if people aren't vaccinated, it will have more places to vary, right, to modify itself.
Exactly.
And that may move it outside the scope of the vaccinations we currently have.
That is a possibility. And when we saw big changes in past pandemics, like the 1918 influenza pandemic, the waves that came through, the true waves, were because of changes in the genetic coding for the virus.
Wow. All right, coming right back. More with Dr. Scott Chambers, Mobile County Health Department. Hey, got your questions lined up at 343-0106, and we'll get them asked.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5. Online, FMTalk1065.com. Continue our conversation with Dr. Scott Chavers, Mobile County Health Department epidemiologist. And I want to say this, too, let alone the event yesterday, the event today, which y'all have coming up. Hats off to y'all because, I was thinking about it during the news break. When we have emergencies happen, let's say we have a hurricane or whatever here, the staff knows that, we work. We work until it's finished. We do 12-hour shifts. You're on the air at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever. That's part of our job. But that only lasts for a couple days. Y'all kind of been in this mode for what we're looking at, a year now. So thank you.
It takes just a lot of different moving parts to make something happen. Like even yesterday, from the support we get from, the City of Mobile Police and from the Sheriff's Department and from the cruise terminal staff and for volunteer, we have volunteers that come down and help us, and just, and to the people that are coming to be vaccinated because they are so patient with the process. And, we do our best to get them in and out and not make it feel like, such a burden to come be vaccinated. And we try to make it efficient, but I know every once in a while we get backed up and that type of thing. And to every single person has just been absolutely understanding and been so very nice and pleasant to us as we've gone through this.
It's a great thing, but it's because y'all are making it happen. We appreciate it. I've got a lot of questions coming in here. Can you ask Dr. Chavers, if I develop symptoms prior to getting my vaccination, should I wait until I feel better and or test negative, or does that matter?
So what we'll recommend to you is if you have COVID-like symptoms, and I'll just say this, we're getting into a time of year where the pollen's getting really bad. My gray truck is now yellow, green. A lot of COVID symptoms look like allergies, okay? Mm-hmm. So if you think you have been exposed, or if you think you really are having symptoms that would lead you to believe you have COVID, please do go get tested. And then during that time period, you need to isolate, meaning you've got 10 days that you should stay at home from the first day of symptoms if that test comes back positive. Now, if it comes back negative, then and there's no other indications, then you're probably negative. But the recommendations are that, if you are positive, you can wait 90 days to be vaccinated. We will vaccinate you after you get out of isolation. We don't make you wait the 90 days. And the 90 days really is there because it conserves the vaccine supply. You've got antibodies that'll protect you for 90 days. That being said, if you're out of isolation and you're not going to infect somebody while you're in line or one of our nurses, then we will vaccinate you.
All right. This question about the variants here. So Moz here says, we keep hearing how more contagious the variants are. You were talking about that. If so, why aren't cases in South Africa skyrocketing? They seem to average about 1,300 cases nationwide daily, and those cities are extremely densely populated.
Right. So a couple things about comparing surveillance systems. So surveillance systems differ geographically. And South Africa is one of those areas that does very high-level surveillance. The other thing, though, is that the current predominant strain in South Africa is the P1351 strain. So it's going to be at steady state there. What you'll notice, though, is if you look at the vaccine trial, for instance, with AstraZeneca and J&J, that once that those trials were going on as we were spiking with the 351 variant in South Africa. So if you looked at it at that time period, you would have seen this peak that stopped. And now they are at a plateau with what they're seeing. So the viral dynamics are going to be when you seed a new population with a new variant that the population has not seen before, or has an older variant that is not as infectious, you will see this rapid uptake of the new variant. And so when we talk about the B117 variant out of the UK, that seems to be the one that we're worried about. That's what's kind of taking over Florida and nationally is probably now over 50% in the U.S. if we were testing like we should. So that would be what I would consider is they're probably at a plateau. Their number of daily cases have stabilized. I will tell you that they underestimate their daily numbers. You know, we are probably one-eighth to one-tenth of what the true is. They are probably 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000. You know, their system is not very good in terms of tracking.
How can, and ask this question for a lot of people here, how can you say that we're underestimated? Like, what is the science that shows the underestimation in both scenarios? Like, how do you know that?
How do we know that? Well, so it comes down to this, that let's say in Mobile County, for you to go get tested, there's typically a reason. It's spontaneous testing. It's not uniform. It's not mandated, that type of thing.
Right. You've had an exposure. So you don't feel good, something like that, right?
Exactly. Or if you're like me, I'm not going to the doctor unless I'm like on death's door.
Yeah.
But if you take a very simple example, meaning that it's more likely that the people that are going in for testing are, they feel like they're at higher risk. Okay, but you'll have 1 or 2 or 5 or hundreds of people who are asymptomatic, and we know that from the studies that come out of Iceland, that about 50% of people that are infected are asymptomatic, or it's a mild kind of thing, and you just don't go, and you're never tested. So the way that you figure out what this ratio is you'll go into a closed population, meaning you look at everyone and you allow people to follow their own propensity for testing. You go in, you see how many people present, see how many of those are positive, and then you go back and you test the entire population. And that ends up being about a 1:8 to 1:10 ratio of those that are positive, those that actually test positive versus those that are truly positive but not testing.
All right, this question was called in here, called Dalton. A man out of Baldwin County said he's looking for the vaccine, having trouble getting it there. Should he travel to get the vaccine? In other words, can he come over here to Mobile County?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that's going to tick some people off, okay? But look, you know, herd immunity isn't just Mobile County. If you go across the bay and go to the beaches and go, you know, wherever, herd immunity is where you are. But just to the gentleman, you know, in Baldwin County, so the problem that Baldwin County has versus Mobile is kind of an infrastructure problem for vaccine delivery. And for Moderna and Pfizer, it's the number that can hold these ultra-low temperatures, either negative 80 for Pfizer or negative 20 for Moderna. It'll get better once J&J is available. But like I said, we need to get as many people that are eligible vaccinated as possible. So what I would encourage him to do is on the 31st, we're going to be back down at the cruise terminal. We'll have plenty of vaccines if you can get up, have breakfast, coffee, read the paper, come around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, he'll drive in, we'll vaccinate him, and he'll be out within an hour.
There you go. Good information out there. I want to bring this up. We talked about a little bit at the end of the show last week, but the vaccines so far, we talk about the low end cutoff, right? 16 or 18. But then there's stories out about children getting vaccinated or toddlers getting vaccinated? What's the latest on that? Is this where we're going next?
Yes, it is where we're going next, and it's a needed step. So the reason that Moderna is 18 and over is because that's how it was studied. That was the inclusion criteria for their clinical trial. It was 18 and up. Pfizer was at 16 and up. So if you come to one of our clinics where we're having Moderna as the vaccine and you're 16 years of old, age 16 years of age, then that's off-label use for Moderna vaccination. And we don't do that. But we've talked about, I think, once or twice, I don't know, Sean, maybe it was during a break, but, you know, really the dynamic needs to be that these vaccines against the virus that causes COVID-19 optimally would be included in our childhood vaccine regimens, just like measles, mumps, rubella, diphtheria, tussis, pertussis, tetanus, so that we're getting everybody vaccinated early, and hopefully they're going to be long-term, long-acting, long-duration vaccines like MMRs, so that once we get this baseline, you know, adult population on down vaccinated, getting them, you know, where they've got immunity, then we can put it into where it is a kind of a routine vaccine for children. And so what you're hearing in the news are the beginning steps for doing those clinical trials for children. And it will start, I think Moderna's already done 12 to 17 in one of their clinical trials. But I know both of the manufacturers are now looking at going down to 6 months. And we can talk.
I want to talk about that for a second, just in that maybe that's not the scientific sphere, but you and I, both dads out there, and you're trying to get this done. I just tell you where my heart is something that is new. How do you get the volunteers? How do you get, if it's not as big a deal for children, right, that we've seen so far, with coronavirus, how do you get people to have a 6-month-old or a 3-year-old or 8-year-old get this vaccine?
Right. So in every clinical trial, you have to follow this standard of ethics with informed consent, ability to withdraw. Consent. Ability to withdraw consent. Right. And so all the ethical things that have been in place for many, many years also apply with research in children. However, what we do in the clinical trials are different than what we do in adults. And it has to do with surrogate endpoint and dose ranging and that type of thing. That I know there may be a visceral reaction, but every vaccine that you've ever had as a child had to at one point in time be tested in children or it would not be available.
It's just I know what you're saying. It's just, it's just the gut sense of it is, it must be a challenge to get those children in to, you know, be participants on it.
One, the studies are not as big as the adult studies. You don't need that many, individuals in the study because you're not looking for actual efficacy like you have to do in the clinical trial. So we've already gotten the science behind what's called correlates of protective immunity. And what those are biological markers within adults that tell us that this person is protected. So that's a correlate of protective immunity. What you do in trials with kids, and even down to 6 months of age, all you're doing then is looking for an antibody response that matches or produces this correlate of protective immunity. So you're not doing the full clinical trials that you would do in adults, because that science has already been, worked through. It's understood. Also, we already know what the safety and efficacy of these vaccines are in the adult population. And so we've got a safe vaccine. We've got an efficacious vaccine. And so, but also let me be very clear. Children are not just small adults, and so not everything transfers. For instance, if you look at the back of a cold medicine or tablets or whatever, a lot of them will have adult doses and under 12 doses, and that's because the studies have been done to figure out what the dose ranging needs to be, because, like I said, children are not just tiny adults.
No, there's something way more dangerous. Coming right back, more with Dr. Scott Chaver. Speaking of the children, got a question here we'll lead off with about children and school coming up this fall. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 154 FM Talk 106.5. A few minutes left in our conversation with Dr. Scott Chavers, Mobile County Health Department, putting on big event, biggest on their records yesterday for COVID vaccinations. Speaking of which, Dr. Chavers, question from Cam here as we went to the break. Do you believe that the kids should be required to be vaccinated before returning to school this fall?
I really don't. I really, and let me just say, I don't believe that anybody should be required to be vaccinated, period. I think it's a personal choice. Where it changes is if you're working in some of the hospitals and that type of thing, and there are some requirements based on, that work environment. But no, I do not think that needs to be a requirement. And this is what the data are showing, right? So being in school is one of the safest places for our kids with respect to them not being infected with COVID-19. The other things that are going on is the background rate of COVID in the community is going down. And so we know that schools are reflective of our communities. We also know that the major individuals that are bringing COVID into the schools is not the kids, it's the teachers. And there's been a big push to get the teachers vaccinated. And then the final little bit there is that, CDC just reduced the social distancing requirement in the younger groups down to 3 feet. Again, all of that plays into, I'm not a big advocate of vaccinating every kid. And I will also say this, there's not going to be a vaccine for kids in the fall against COVID-19. These things are done extremely slow and very, very carefully. And I've heard some very optimistic things on TV from Dr. Fauci and others, but we're not going to be sticking kids with the COVID vaccine by the fall. But anyway, your kids are safe at school. No, there should not be a requirement to vaccinate them.
I don't know that. Well, there's a flood of questions coming in here. We'll probably have to address these on next week's show. But once again, for people looking for the vaccine, you're talking about another big event coming up at the cruise terminal. When's that?
We have another big event on the 31st, so a week from tomorrow, down at Mobile, Alabama Cruise Terminal. It'll be a first dose vaccine clinic. We have a second dose clinic that's coming up on Thursday. So if you were vaccinated 28 days ago, it's easy to figure out because February was a 28-day month. But you can figure out which day. But you can also check our website. If you go to mchdcares.com, all of our clinics are listed all the times. If we're doing drive-thrus, we'll put up the traffic flow maps, that type of thing. If you don't have access to a computer, you can call 410-CARES and also hear recorded information about what's coming up.
Dr. Chavers, we appreciate it, and we'll talk soon and catch up with you next week. All right, Dr. Scott Chambers, Mobile County Health Department, and we're out of here. Paul Feinbaum show on the way next. I'll talk to y'all tomorrow. By the way, a preview on tomorrow's show. We've got Congressman Jerry Carl is going to join us. Of course, he was part of that presser yesterday about the truck bridge. We'll ask him about that and a whole lot more coming up on tomorrow's Midday Mobile. Y'all have a great one. Try to stay dry. Go grab your rain jacket, umbrella, both.